Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
Back where I come from, people always say, "Hot enough for you?" Never hot enough. You're hot, be hot. You're cold, be cold. We have a familiar face from long ago. Welcome back. Let's do introductions around.
Wendy,
Judy,
Ellie,
Doug,
Karin,
Samia,
Jennifer.
Jennifer has moved to San Jose, bicycle length away. Very happy to see you again.
Very happy to be back.
Yay. We're just coming to the end of Bendoa. I was trying to remember this afternoon what we had planned to do next. Does anybody remember?
Instructions to the cook.
Which one?
Instructions to the cook.
Oh, we did talk about that. Yes, we did. That was it. I think that was it. Instructions to the cook. Also Dogen, and also about practical matters. Some of Dogen is very philosophical and complex, but Bendoa is not, and instruction to the cook is extremely practically profound. It's a wonderful combination. So last time we talked about the precepts. And the next question is, if you're a really good Zazen sitter, then why can't you practice other practices at the same time? Wouldn't that be a good idea? And there were two other flavors of Buddhism at the same time, which were a little bit different. One was concentration practices and one was Vipassana. And Dogen says, Zazen is Zazen. Just sit. Don't try to cloud it up with something else. Or Uchiyama Roshi says, do the something else. And don't cloud it up with Zazen. But at a certain point, commit. I think it's extremely good advice. Otherwise, we're always in between in a way that's not serviceable to us. There is something that carries us in our commitment. And otherwise, we're kind of swinging in the wind and on our own hook. And that's not completely natural way to be. It's being caught in thought. So his advice, it is pretty funny, Uchiyama Roshi. He says, he talks about a group that he knows where they try to do everything good. And he reads their newsletter every month. He says, they practice Zazen, of course, and Okada method breathing, brown rice diet, vegetarian diet, acupuncture, and moxa. In addition to listening to beautiful music, because even cows give milk well when they hear music, such as the miscellaneous practice. He says, Shinran Shonen put away all those things and just focused on abandoning oneself to Amida Buddha, or Amitabha, which is another kind of commitment, which is really the other side of Zazen. I won't go into that now, but bottom line, Dogen says, not necessary to keep crowding the mind with a lot of different practices. That sitting Zazen isn't about new ideas. It's about sitting down and getting to know ourself, becoming familiar with what this is. Deeply, deeply familiar with this body-mind experience that we are. It isn't about ideas. Though it often seems like it, I know. So are there questions about that? It's a very short chapter. I don't think he means not to do those things. I think he means to, if you're going to have a practice, those are all good practices. They're excellent. But you wouldn't mix them all up in the same space. Well, that's what he was saying this group did. They were playing music, they were doing yoga, they were eating brown rice, they were, you know, doing all the things all at the same time. So one thing at a time. And that's all you need. Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, we're all doing those things, of course. Well, question 13 is fairly short, too, and it's a very merciful one for us who are lay practicers. So much of Dogen is talking to monks and talking to people in a zendo or in a monastery. And in this early talk that he gave, there must have been many lay people listening to this talk, because the question is, how about us? It says, can this practice be carried out also by men and women lay people, or only practiced by monks? Many, many people ask that. And as Uchiyama Roshi says, in Japan, they're flabbergasted that lay people would sit zazen, much less go to sesshin, do retreats, go to monasteries, and practice like a monk. That it's just not done in Japan. Sometimes they'll take a whole group of businessmen to a Heiji monastery, the biggest one in Japan, and de-stress them by giving them a week of zazen. Sometimes schools take a whole bunch of school kids and expose them to the practice to de-stress them. The idea is that it's so tense and difficult that this practice will be good for people. And of course it is. But it's not quite the same as what the question is based on. The question is coming from people who are, as we are, interested in cultivating Zazen as life, our life. And how does that fit in ordinary life? How can we be monks when we're not monks? We're just running around and running our errands and doing our stuff. And how can women fit into this picture? Because obviously women aren't the same, and in most cultures, including Japanese culture, women don't fit in the same way. There are many, many monks in Japan and not very many nuns, because the nun's life is so difficult. They have no standing. That's true in Tibet, the Tibetan practice. It's true in Vajrayana practice and also in Vipassana. There are various movements to correct the balance. Many people are working hard about that, but it's a struggle. So when Dogen says to the question, can men and women also lay people practice, can this practice be carried out by them? Dogen says, well, this is Uchiyama Roshi saying, the starting point of Buddhism is searching after the truth of the life of oneself. Since it is truth of the life of each self, it is only natural not to distinguish old from young, men from women, or noble birth from humble birth. Buddhism lies beyond our practice of Zazen. Behind Buddhism, there should be one's own life. It is essential to see Buddhism from the ground of our own lives and examine our Zazen on the basis of Buddhism. In doing so, it is very apparent that the idea that we can attain some special Satori-like superhuman power is off the mark. I'm sorry, Paul. That's too bad.
Paul keeps coming with this
tape. Yeah, they keep eating the car.
That's one of my favorite lines. So Uchiyama Roshi says, what I want to say is that we shouldn't make Zazen something special, such as only being able to do Zazen inside of a formal Zazen hall. We should think of Zazen on the ground of the life of each of ourselves. We should examine Buddha Dharma on the basis of our own life and examine Zazen in the basis of the Buddha Dharma. So Dogen's answer certainly the Buddha ancestors, with their great sympathy, keep open the vast gate of compassion in order to allow all living beings to enter enlightenment. So which of the various beings would not enter? It only depends on whether or not one has aspiration. Without relationship to being a monk or a lay person, anyone who can deeply discern what is important or trivial will thereby have this faith. Needless to say, people who think secular duties interfere with Buddha Dharma only know that there is no Buddha Dharma in the secular realm and do not yet realize that there is nothing secular in the realm of Buddha Dharma. That sounds like a little mathematical puzzle, doesn't it? But it's a trick of speech that puts the truth in its place. Questions?
I have a question here somewhere. We have to say a few things, but I'm kind of interested in spirituality and business and getting closer and closer to Zen in business.
Mm-hmm.
I just heard they were just doing a story. I didn't get to hear the story, but in Japan, there's a Silicon Valley-like place that's bridging technology with Zen. So I didn't. It was on one of the NPR shows today. But, I guess my struggle has been, I've read a lot from Steve Hagen where he talks about the only motivation behind Zazen is to be awake.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently come across a book called Zen and Creative Management by Alvin Lowe. He's like in Canada. He's at Montreal Zen Center. And he talks about how Zazen is basically a good enough solution to the tension that's in business. Because people try to fix things. And, so I guess I'm trying to just my question is, I guess the other thing I'd like to say is I've struggled too with most of my meditation has been in the soul by myself,
mm-hmm.
and I've really tried to make an effort of meditating in a group at least once a week, and I notice how much more efficient it is and better. I guess maybe if you could comment on that a little bit about that idea of, yes, meditation is there to be awake, and yet how can we, there's business, there's life, there's, goal setting and things like that, and not being attached to it, but I don't know if there's anything that kind of comes up for you in that.
Well, I think that is the question. How do we do this? I think that's all of our question. That if we commit to this practice, we're also committed and attached in many, many different ways. In relationships, and in business, and in our neighbors, and our community, and all of those things. And so it, it's certainly been my subject for my whole practice life, which has been long now. And what I know about it is that if one has a sincere practice and a continual practice of just sitting and a sangha and a teacher, that's the Buddha Dharma Sangha that is really essential to us as being able to sustain a practice. It's really not healthy or even possible to practice without a sangha and without a teacher in some way. It doesn't mean you have to be right there. You can do, sometimes people do it with Skype. They're Skyping to Japan now with from here with a sitting group. But having a sangha to be a part of creates a monk kind of mind already. It means that we all understand each other in a certain way, even though we don't know each other very well. We're very intimate in a way that is nourishing for us, for the human mind and body. It is something we very, very much need in order to be healthy and wise. So I think Dogen's focus on Zazen, he talks about the kings and the ministers who practiced and could do it, be a king and a minister at the same time, but still have a very good practice. And I think that's the clue. I think we just have to do it and commit to it, and from that express its express in whatever else we do. So it changes what we do, even though we don't try to change it. We just pay the kind of attention that we've learned in Zazen, and that all by itself is a gift to others. If we're able to stop and really listen, to really attend to somebody rather than brushing them off. And that's anybody can do in any situation. And we learn to do that when we sit. That's how we learn to be with ourselves. To let things be the way they are. But it's not easy. And one of the reasons it's not easy is because there are so many distractions. It's one thing to know ourselves, but another not to be drawn into a thousand different directions and to be just lose the focus of it, lose the intention and the attention. So that's one way we can help each other, and that's one way that meeting like this is helpful, and Sesshin is helpful. our Saturday sits, you know, every time there's an opportunity to sit, to confirm our experience and nourish this side of our mind, this side of our body that is so well trained on the other side and so easily slips into a single-minded mode of. So that's as far as I've ever thought, been able to think, and I find Dogen very encouraging in this way, that we don't have to be monks, and nobody's expecting us to be monks, but there is a life of Zazen in any life that we have. And it's a life of dignity and integrity and of compassion, which is how we learn as we sit to be dignified and compassionate with ourselves. Thank you. It's a wonderful question. We'll struggle with it for the rest of our life, I think.
It took a while for me to generate it.
Yeah, I know.
What do you think of, this is sort of a related question actually, what do you think of Thich Nhat Hanh's engaged Buddhism? And what, and related to that, what does Buddhism have to say about popular issues like global warming and environmental destruction, mass extinction of endangered species, the disparity between rich and poor, it's like all those political hot potatoes that are going on right now.
Well, Buddha goes back to the source of our suffering. So he goes back before those things to where they come from. And you could say they come from ignorance, from an unwillingness to honestly look at how things are and what we are doing, so that the effects that we have on the earth, for instance, are just going by everybody. Nobody's paying attention until suddenly, you know, it should have been seen long, long since, but it's a kind of sleep. And one of the things that makes this so valuable, this practice, is that it's a wake-up practice. Wake up to what's happening now. I saw it over the weekend. One of my sons came to visit from Texas, where they've just had way too much rain. They live next to the Blanco River, so they were a part of the drama that happened in Texas just a few weeks ago. And they use more water and electricity in my house in 3 days than I use in a month. They just could not get the picture. And I tried to explain, but it doesn't feel crucial to them. Though it should, because their water table is in terrible shape also. But until you get hit by a 2x4 in some kind of way, we don't wake up. I think it's the basic question about human life and mind that we tend so quickly to slip into ignorance and just don't want to see it. It's too uncomfortable and it's a lot of trouble. Heck of a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. Karen?
What's the other side of that?
ordinary life.
What was the word for it?
Samsara. Something else? Oh, I said Amitabha. That's another kind of meditation practice. It's pure land.
It's what?
Pure land.
Pure land.
So most of the temples, most of the Japanese temples around the Bay Area are pure land temples. And if you go inside, you'll see they're set up with pews, just like a church.
Right.
And they give... It's just like a church. They have hymnals, but the hymns are all about Buddha instead of Jesus. Everybody should go. It's really, they're lovely people, mostly Japanese, but not completely. And they have great festivals where everybody's invited, and there's dancing and food and music. But their practice is to accept from the very beginning that they are hopeless. Each person, I myself am hopeless, can't be fixed. There's nothing I can do. And all I can do is throw myself at the mercy, on the mercy of Amitabha Buddha. And if you can chant the name of Amitabha Buddha with complete devotion and purity, even once in your life, you will be reborn in the pure land. So it's, in a way, I always call it the other side, because in Zazen, we, even though we think we're humble, we come to the cushion with a certain kind of hubris, a little too much sure about ourselves. Now I'm going to sit, and I'm going to do a good sit, and I'm going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the longer we sit, the more humble we become. And the more we begin to realize that our life itself is about surrendering to life itself. And I think the Pure Land side, the more you're able to truly abandon yourself to Amida, to faith in life itself, you come to the same place. I think they're coming from different directions, but we meet in the same place.
I think I told you this. I asked a pastor of one of these churches if they never meditate.
No.
Go down the street for that.
Yes. Yes. It's a different practice.
It reminded me of the Lutheran churches I grew up in.
Mm-hmm. It arose at the same time that Zen came to Japan. Shinran showed up with this new practice. There were a lot of new practices. So they grew up together, and they still practice kind of together in Japan. There's a kind of fellow feeling among them, even though it's, you know, it's the same Buddha, it's just a different path, as they say. Well, it's 8 o'clock, Samia.
Announcements for Sashin, if you're interested. We still have availability at Chikoji. It starts on the 3rd and ends on the 10th. And I remember once Angie saying that it's the best gift you can give yourself. And it's so true. If you have time to come up one day, 2 days, 3 days, after 3 days, there's a big discount. No, I'm just kidding. It just gets better. But whatever you could do, you could see me or talk to Wendy or Ellie if you have the time.
So that means that some of us won't be here next Tuesday. So is somebody going to be here next Tuesday? Who will be here? Dave? Jennifer?
I wonder if maybe Jeffrey's going to be here.
He should be back by then. So you two could keep the walls warm. Would you? Would you?
Sure.
In case somebody else comes?
Sure.
Yeah? We never know. Hmm? We never know when somebody comes.
I wouldn't know the routine. Maybe she knows about it than I do. So.
Well, you could just sit.
Yeah.
And maybe have a conversation. That would be nice. Great.
And to keep it simple, they might not have to change if it's okay.
Move the chairs.
It might be simpler and less things to worry about.
Yes, don't move the chairs.
Don't move the chairs.
No. Helen and I did that one time when it was just the two of us. You just turned around. Remember, we just turned around the chairs that we were using.
Yeah, that works. Works great. We have sort of a doke sun.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Do you have a key?
No, I don't.
So, who has a key that they could have?
I can give you my key.
Okay. Super. Okay. Our 1 minute sit. Oh, and do look up instructions to the cook. It's a really excellent book, and we'll be talking about that in very short time. Okay.